Coming up next, another in a series of luncheon speakers from the Economic Club of Indiana. Indiana University President Michael McRobbie spoke to the club on December 18th. McRobbie told club members that IU and the state are working together to make Indiana a major player in the growing global economy of the 21st century.
Indiana University and the state that she serves have reached points in their history that are rich with opportunity, challenge, and the promise of great rewards. Working together, I believe we can take full advantage of these opportunities and reap the transformative benefits that they promise. Our state currently has the fourth lowest business costs in the nation. It ranks 12th in the Small Business Survival Index and 10th in the production of fast-growing, high-achieving companies.
Indiana University President Michael McRobbie talks about higher education and how it will affect the future. Next, on the Economic Club of Indiana. But first, this news.
Broadcast of the Economic Club of Indiana Speaker Series is made possible in part by ProLiance Energy. ProLiance, adding power to energy. Information is at ProLiance.com.
Welcome to the Indiana Public Broadcasting series of luncheon speakers from the Economic Club of Indiana in downtown Indianapolis. The most recent speaker was Indiana University President Michael McRobbie. McRobbie told the club that IU's academic programs play a vital role in positioning the state of Indiana as a leader in the 21st century.
We're delighted that all of you are here today to hear our speaker. It's an honor for me to introduce someone who's also the president of an institution of higher education. Almost all of the ties in my closet are blue and gold, but I found one that has red in it today, Michael, so I wore it for you. When Indiana University welcomed Michael McRobbie as its 18th president in July, the school was turning to an individual with a reputation as a man of action. A trailblazer in information technology, McRobbie has now set his sights on building a new vision for Indiana University. He has vowed to rededicate the institution to what he describes as its core missions: education, research, and engagement in the future of our state. McRobbie made the following remarks after being chosen as the school's new president. Our vision must be both local and global. We must serve the state while focusing on the international horizon. Specifically, McRobbie says that the international dimension of higher education is a priority in order to properly prepare students for what has become the flat world of our global economy. Just this month, he's taken his efforts on the road internationally, wrapping up a trip to China where he strengthened IU's ties with a top Chinese university. He has also returned to his Australian homeland to receive an honorary doctorate from his own alma mater. McRobbie first came to IU in 1997 as Vice President of Information Technology. Since then, he helped the university acquire one of the world's 20 most powerful supercomputers. In 2004, Computer World magazine named him to its list of premier 100 IT leaders. McRobbie also served as the university's interim provost and vice president of academic affairs prior to becoming president. With his expertise at fostering research partnerships, McRobbie's been instrumental in securing multi-million dollar grants for his life science initiatives at IU. McRobbie's speech today is entitled The Indiana Edge, Excellence, Innovation, and Economic Development. He believes that IU as a public university has a responsibility to the residents of Indiana to engage the future of our state. If you have a question as you listen to Dr. McRobbie's remarks, Please write it on one of the white cards on your table, and after his remarks, bring it to the head table so that your thoughts can be part of our question and answer session. Now please join me in welcoming Indiana University President Michael McRobbie.
Thank you very much, President Mosley. I have to apologize to you in that I have a rather heavy cold, so that is going to make your understanding an Australian accent even more incomprehensible than you probably already find it. In that context, I should tell you a story about when I first met Herbert Wells, Chancellor Wells. It was just after I got here in 1997, and I had arranged a courtesy meeting with Dr. Wells. Of course, he was internationally famous. I knew of him and known of him a long time before I arrived here. And the day arrived, and I went in to see him, and he was sitting at his desk. He was a very old man then, I think 92 or 93. And I sat down, and I started talking to him. I had a series of questions and things I wanted to ask him about. And I started talking to him, and he looked very disturbed and sort of irritated. And I'd ask him a question, and he would then respond with something that really wasn't really relevant to the question I'd asked him. So I started to think, oh, he's poor Dr. Wells, he's getting on. But then he pressed the buzzer on his desk, and a secretary came in, and he turned to her and said, I can't understand a word he's saying. He had two very large hearing aids. I think those of you who knew him might remember that. So she sat down, and I would then ask him a question, and she would then ask Dr. Wells the question, and his eyes would light up, and he would give me a response. And so we carried out a highly animated, extremely interesting discussion the rest of the afternoon in that way, with his assistant translating from English into English. First time in all my international engagements I've ever actually had to have a translator do that before. So I am greatly honoured to be here this afternoon, and I don't often have the opportunity to count myself among individuals who have addressed you before, like President George Herbert Bush and Alan Greenspan, George Will, Alice Rivlin, E.W. Hirsch, F.W. de Klerk, to name just a few. I'll certainly try to measure up as best I can to those high standards, but I am somewhat accustomed to that kind of pressure in that those to have followed Herman Wells, about whom I've just spoken, who was a man of such vision and ambition that he was able to transform a small Midwestern college into a great public research university of international renown. In that context, you really do get used to being humbled by your predecessors. Now, I believe that both Indiana University and the state that she serves have reached points in their history that are rich with opportunity, challenge, and the promise of great rewards. Working together, I believe we can take full advantage of these opportunities and reap the transformative benefits that they promise. Our state currently has the fourth lowest business costs in the nation. It ranks 12th in the Small Business Survival Index and 10th in the production of fast-growing, high-achieving companies. In the face of these facts, it is clear that Indiana has the potential to make great gains in the 21st century global economy. It is clear that we have valuable competitive advantages as we work together to cultivate a thriving culture of entrepreneurship. As we do so, we build on Indiana's traditional strengths. We are still the nation's number one manufacturing state. But today, one in every six of these manufacturing jobs is devoted to Hoosier exports. Indiana's exports have now grown to a $22.6 billion business, and that's more than most medium-sized economies in the world. Only four other states in the nation have an export economy growing at a faster rate than ours. Only two other states have a stronger record in pharmaceutical exports, which is the fastest growing sector of Indiana's international economy. As a public university with a statewide network of campuses and an international reach, IU represents the single largest repository of international expertise in the state. Our faculty are conducting world-class research and transferring their discoveries to the marketplace as never before. and our alumni continue to distinguish themselves here, both at home and beyond our borders overseas. In fact, in China just a few weeks ago, I met numerous IU alums who are really doing remarkable things elsewhere in the world. An important part of Indiana's edge has always been her great research universities. Today, that is more true than ever before. My goal as IU's president is to sharpen that edge. As good as we are, we have to get better, and we must strive continually to improve. My vision for IU can be distilled into a simple sentence. That is to emerge as one of the very best public research universities of the 21st century, and that we should help Indiana emerge as a major force in the global economy. IU will work towards those overarching goals in the context of her two primary missions. These are to provide the best possible education for our students and to vigorously pursue path-breaking research in the sciences, the professions, the humanities, and the creative arts. Economic development and engagement constitute a third mission, and this mission depends, of course, on being able to perform the first two at high standards of excellence. Any great state must have a well-trained workforce. We take very seriously our historic obligation to enhance Indiana's most valuable resource, its human capital. We are doing so with an intense focus on expanded enrollment, academic excellence, accessibility, and degree completion. IU currently is the top producer of professionals in all of the top 10 hot jobs categories in Indiana. We educate more of the state's nurses, teachers, dentists, IT professionals, surgeons, lawyers, and police officers, more than any other Hoosier college or university. Moreover, in the face of a nationwide physician shortage, the IU School of Medicine ranks second nationally in the number of physicians it supplies to its home state. Now, the enrollment increases on our campuses point to a trend. More Hoosier High School graduates are choosing to continue their educations, which is great news for the future of the state. It reflects a statement by IU's 10th President, William Lowe Bryan, a statement that he made at the beginning of the last century in his inaugural address. He said, "What the people want is open paths from every corner of the state through the schools to the highest and best things which they can achieve, to make such paths, to make them open to the poorest, and to make them lead to the highest levels is the mission of democracy. It is also the mission of Indiana University. IU remains committed to providing a range of educational opportunities on our campuses across the state. We also remain committed to keeping Indiana's best and brightest students here at home. This year, IU Bloomington's freshmen are the most talented in recent history, with SAT scores 25 points higher than last year's record-setting average. This is in a year when the national average SAT score fell by 4 points. Overall, the challenge for the university is to make sure that all qualified Indiana students have access to and can afford an IU education. We are rising to that challenge on many fronts. Last spring, IU Bloomington announced three scholarship programs that invest $10 million per year of campus funds in scholarships for Hoosier students. This aid, together with state and federal aid, and the enormous success of the IU Bloomington Matching the Promise campaign, which has already raised $216 million for student fellowships, means that this year, for the first time, the neediest students are attending IU Bloomington nearly free. There are about 1,000 in-state freshmen at IU Bloomington with family incomes under $50,000. These financial aid eligible students now pay on an average of just $341 for tuition, room, and board. And this is particularly important and relevant to minority students who form a disproportionate percentage of students in that category. It means that those students can now get an IU education at almost no cost and with no debt when they graduate. And the average out-of-pocket cost for Hoosier students with family incomes between $50,000 and $100,000 who are eligible for financial aid has fallen to $8,300. That is 40% below the full cost. This fall, almost 1,500 of IU Bloomington's incoming Indiana freshmen are in that category. And just yesterday, IUPUI announced with a wonderful announcement that it will provide financial aid for every eligible incoming freshman who has received a state 21st Century Scholar Award or a federal Pell Grant. And let me compliment Chancellor Bance on this great initiative that will in turn also ensure that minority students who, again, disproportionately make up students in that category will be able to receive an education, an excellent education at IUPUI at much lower costs and with much lower debt when they graduate. This $2.1 million initiative that Chancellor Bance announced yesterday marks the largest commitment of financial resources for need-based aid in the history of IUPUI. Now, in my inaugural address, I pledged that an IU education would remain accessible and affordable to every citizen of the state, no matter where they come from, no matter what their background, and no matter who they are. And over the next few years, I will work tirelessly together with Chancellor Bance and the other chancellors to make good on that promise. We've already gone a good way in that direction. The impact of financial assistance on retention and graduation rates is dramatic. Figures show that students who have two-thirds of their financial needs met graduate at twice the rate of students who receive less aid. This fall, I also announced a new program called Degrees of Excellence, which is designed to increase graduation rates on all of our campuses. Under this initiative, we will extend the Pell Promise and 21st Century Covenant programs, as IUPUI now has already done, and also reinvest existing funds to improve graduation rates. Taken together, this represents a base investment of $4 million in efforts to help students finish their degrees. Now, to expand these opportunities, we will work in even closer partnership with Purdue University and Ivy Tech in those parts of the state where we can collectively bring greater educational opportunity to the citizens of Indiana. IU and Purdue may compete on the athletic field, but when it comes to providing educational access to Hoosiers, we will continue to join hands and work together. In fact, Purdue President Franz Cordova, Ivy Tech President Tom Snyder and I began exploring ways to expand cooperation between our two institutions before either of us even took office, and we continue to do so. As IU Provost, I saw to it that Indiana University and Ivy Tech were the first institutions to complete statewide transfer and degree articulation agreements. IU and Ivy Tech students now have more than 70 courses and a dozen degree programs that transfer seamlessly between our institutions, creating new pathways of educational opportunity. Franz, Tom and I all know that our collaborations in producing educated citizens, cutting-edge research and enhanced economic development initiatives can have a transformative impact on the state. One of my central priorities is to enhance Indiana University's research programs across the board. We are doing well in this regard, but we must not and will not rest on our laurels. During fiscal year 2007, IU faculty were awarded $433 million in sponsored funding to support their research and service activities. This funding supports thousands of jobs directly at IU and indirectly throughout the rest of the state, high-paying jobs and jobs that usually attract highly qualified individuals. This is the second highest fiscal year total in the university's history, and likely the second highest total ever in Hoosier history, given that IU has consistently brought in more sponsored research dollars than all the rest of the state's public and private universities combined. Indeed, national rankings gauging the scholarly productivity of our faculty show them to be the most productive researchers in the state and among the most productive in the nation. We are proud of these research achievements. Let me tell you about two initiatives recently in the news that help illustrate how IU's public policy researchers are helping to build a stronger Indiana. The first is the Local Government Commission headed by former Indiana Governor Joe Kernan and Indiana Supreme Court Chief Justice Randall Shepard. The landmark Local Government Commission committee was staffed and funded by the Center for Urban Policy and Environment here at IUPUI. And Center Director John Krause, who is here today and who deserves enormous credit for the outstanding work of that committee, played a critical role in in this process as well. The Centre recommended broad-ranging changes that will lead to what it calls leaner, more efficient government. I believe this report will have great resonance with Hoosier taxpayers. Now, the second of these projects is an environmental study. Earlier this fall, Governor Daniels called upon former IU Dean and Deputy EPA Director Jim Barnes to conduct a water quality review of Lake Michigan. Dean Barnes' expertise yielded a number of recommendations. They have cleared the way for BP's $3.8 billion investment in its Whiting facility and will enhance economic development opportunities in the region. These are just two recent examples of how Indiana University is using the academic and technical expertise of faculty to address real problems that affect the lives and well-being of Hoosiers every day. I believe that the great research universities in this country must be engaged in precisely this type of practical problem solving and analysis. Yet if IU is to make further progress in our research mission, we must acknowledge that we are engaged in nothing short than a global battle for brains, and that we must seek the best faculty and the best research and teaching faculty. Endowed and named professorships are essential tools in our ability to attract and retain the world's best scholars, scientists, professionals, and artists. IU had 72 endowed chairs in 1995. We ranked last in the Big Ten. As a result of our donors' generosity over the last 12 years, we now have 412 endowed chairs and named professorships across the university. At last count, we continue to rank first in the Big Ten in this very important measure. My vision for IU also includes accelerating our faculty recruitment and research efforts in the life sciences, one of the most important areas for basic and applied research and economic development. I imagine the statistics I'm about to recite are not news to anybody here. Indiana currently has the second highest concentration of biopharmaceutical jobs in the nation. The 578,000 Indiana jobs tied to the health industry account for $21 billion in wages and $8 billion in federal and state taxes paid. That is just over 20% of Indiana's tax base. The Indiana Life Sciences and Health, Indiana University Life and Health Sciences Initiative builds upon Indiana's national leadership in this area and capitalizes on IU's unique statewide network of medical education centers based, of course, on the School of Medicine here. This initiative started 8 years ago with the Indiana Genomics Project, generously funded with a $155 million grant from the Lilly Endowment. It was dramatically expanded at IU Bloomington in 2004 with the establishment of MetaCyte, the Multidisciplinary Indiana Metabolomics and Cytomics Project, also funded with another $53 million grant from the Lilly Endowment. With the benefit of these investments, Indiana University stands at the threshold of national leadership in the life sciences. The Indiana University Life Sciences Strategic Plan is a roadmap for achieving this leadership. Our conversations that I've had with President Cordova leave me encouraged that we will have a chance to travel this path together with Purdue and our sister institutions in Indiana. Life sciences industries are fairly booming along a stretch that includes Michigan, Ohio, Illinois, and Indiana. Our neighbors are making sizable investments in this burgeoning industry. For example, Michigan has invested more than $900 million in the life sciences. It plans to invest an additional $4 billion over the next 10 years. Building on Indiana's and IU's strengths in this area, the Indiana General Assembly provided a one-time appropriation of $15 million to establish the Indiana Life Sciences Fund. This is a very important beginning. In our current highly competitive environment, if we stand still, though, others will surpass us, and we will have failed to capitalize on one of Indiana's greatest assets. Of course, we are very grateful for this $15 million appropriation, which we made available through the Indiana Economic Development Corporation. We have met with IEDC and hope to have a major announcement that we can make in this area in the spring. As we create further incentives to attract new businesses and industry, the health demographics of our state pose challenges. Indiana ranks 16th in the nation in the prevalence of heart disease-related deaths. Nearly a third of our citizens are obese, 13% more than in 1990. And our rate of cancer deaths has increased by more than 200% since 1990. These statistics are even more alarming for African American Hoosiers, who experience 62% more premature deaths than their Caucasian counterparts. With the state's only medical school, its expanding network of Clarion hospitals, and a wealth of faculty expertise, IU has transformative resources it can bring to bear on these problems through research, education, outreach, and expanded clinical care. Yet IU research, especially in areas like the life sciences, cannot expand without more space. In a report I commissioned 3 years ago when I was Vice President for Research, this report indicated that Indiana University will need about 5 million square feet of space on both the Bloomington and APUI campuses over the next 10 to 20 years in order to reach our full potential as a research university. The equation is very simple. More space equals more research dollars equals more research. It also equals more life-saving discoveries. A month ago, we took the first step. We took the first step in addressing this research space problem when I announced that Indiana University would create an integrated master plan to guide future university development. In fact, the first meeting of the committee that I set up to begin that process is this afternoon. When he developed a master plan for the university, President Wells called the process, quote, making room for the future. And that is just what it is. We are very grateful for the support that the Indiana General Assembly has given for IU facilities since our founding in 1820. Their support is essential in addressing our facility needs. Yet, they cannot help us fund all of our needs for space. It is simply impossible. If we are to join the very top tier of the 21st century's public research universities, we must rely in a much more substantial and sustained way on our own resources and the private generosity of the university's alumni and friends. We are already doing so. More than half of the $500 million in construction at IU over the last 5 years has been supported by the generosity of our donors. In my inaugural address, I announced a new facilities expansion initiative that will include research and classroom space for the arts, humanities, social sciences, the professions, international studies, the life sciences, and economic development, all areas of high priority for Indiana University. Together with the $500 million of construction that we have either underway or planned now, and what we can expect from the legislature over the next few budget cycles, our goal is nothing short of having nearly $1 billion of new construction underway or completed over the next 10 years. We are already making significant progress in this regard. Last week I announced that the Lilly Endowment is providing $44 million to fund a much-needed practice facility for the Jacobs School of Music. This new building will provide technologically and acoustically superior teaching and practice facilities that will rival those of any music school or conservatory in the world. This is the largest gift that the Jacobs School has ever received and the largest gift that has ever been received by IU for the support of the arts. And I'm sure you all know that the IU Jacobs School of Music is not only one of the largest in the world, but it is arguably the finest. We are committed to extending its excellence into the future. Now, research in medicine, the sciences and technology is widely acknowledged as a powerful engine of economic development. The arts, though, receive considerably less attention in this regard. Yet a recent national report provides evidence that communities which invest in the arts reap the additional benefits of jobs, economic growth, and a quality of life that positions them well to compete in the 21st century economy. Nationally, the arts generate nearly $30 billion in annual revenue to local, state, and federal governments. By comparison, the three levels of government collectively spend an average of less than $4 billion annually to support arts and culture. That is about a 7-to-1 return on investment. According to a recent study by the Arts Council of Indianapolis, arts organizations in Indianapolis annually generate nearly $500 million in economic activity. This is an increase of about 59% since the last study done about 5 years ago. The arts support about 15,000 full-time jobs, attract nearly $52 million in local and state government revenue, and draw audiences from around the world to the crossroads of America. The arts and humanities are one component of IU's newest economic development initiative, which I unveiled in my inaugural address. This is called Innovate Indiana. In his inaugural address, IU's first president, Andrew Wiley, posed the question of what use is the college to the community. Innovate Indiana provides a compelling 21st century response to that question. It will invest in and coordinate IU's economic development activities across the state. It will reinvigorate our efforts to turn the innovations of our faculty into new products, services, and treatments, and it will help better connect the business community in Indiana, the nation, and the world to IU. Our new Vice President for Engagement, Bill Steffen, who is over here, heads up this initiative. Bill's extensive leadership expertise in government, healthcare, and higher education makes him the right person to lead our efforts to strengthen the Hoosier economy. The first major initiative under Innovate Indiana will be the construction of a new Indiana University incubator facility in Bloomington at 10th and the Bypass. However, our focus and energy will extend beyond Bloomington. Currently, the IU Emerging Technology Center, whose CEO is here today at the head of the canal, is at capacity with promising life sciences startup companies. Over the last 3 years, the IU ETC has brought to Indianapolis more than 300 new high-tech jobs with salaries in excess of $60,000. We will determine how best next to build on these successes. There are also a number of promising initiatives underway in other parts of the state. In Kokomo, IU has been instrumental in helping create an incubator facility in Tech Park. We are collaborating with Purdue and New Albany to develop a new Tech Park. IU has also been working in collaboration with the Uptown Richmond Innovation Center, which is the first business incubator in East Central Indiana. Since 2005, IU has partnered with Purdue, IPFW, the Northeast Indiana Corporate Council, and the Northeast Indiana Innovation Center to jointly fund the Director of Engagement in the Fort Wayne region. Our new Medical Education Center at South Bend is located on the Notre Dame campus. There, Notre Dame and IU faculty collaborate on cancer research. Now, we are revitalizing our collaborations around the world. Just last week, Bill Steffen and I and others returned from a trip to China. We visited Hangzhou, which is known as China's Silicon Valley. Key to the development of technology there has been Zhejiang University, one of the top five universities in China. This is the 25th anniversary of Indiana University's formal relationship with Zhejiang University. On this visit, we signed an agreement extending the relationship for another 5 years. This year, incidentally, is also the 20th anniversary of the sister relationship between the Chinese province of Zhejiang, one of the three wealthiest provinces in China, and the state of Indiana. The trip was truly an historic occasion. It marked the first ever symposium on research commercialization jointly conducted by Indiana University and Zhejiang University, which their president and I jointly opened. We compared our different approaches to advanced technology, technology transfer, entrepreneurship, and the commercialization of intellectual property. We also were able to begin discussions about areas such as informatics, international business, and economic development, in which we hope to further our collaborations. Indiana's own Cummins Incorporated is a great example of how international trade benefits Indiana. Cummins recently announced orders from Beijing and the city of Hangzhou, where I just was, from public transit companies in those cities for a total of 1,900 diesel engines. While expanding abroad, Cummins is also working to strengthen Indiana. Cummins has made education and workforce development a necessary condition for the expansion of its operations in Columbus. This challenge, which included the addition of nearly 800 new jobs, led to an enhanced alliance among the Columbus Learning Center, IU, Ivy Tech, and Purdue University to expand degree programs in a more seamless and efficient manner. One of the most recent extensions of this productive nexus of higher education and regional industry is the Cummins Kelly Direct MBA program. The Cummins program was launched in February 2007, and the first class included 23 Cummins managers from India, China, and the United States. Let me then Let me, in this context, share with you some of the basics of our 21st century international strategy for IU. It focuses on expanding partnerships, such as these I've just described, preparing our students to live and work in a flat world and enabling our faculty to engage on a global scale as they seek to address the world's most pressing problems. Study abroad is one important way, one vital way, that we can ensure that our students become globally literate in their major fields of study. Over the last decade, IU Bloomington has been among the nation's top universities and students who take advantage of study abroad opportunities. In 2005-06, IU Bloomington and IUPUI sent nearly 2,000 students abroad. All IU campuses now have study abroad activity. One of my goals as IU's president is to significantly expand these programs. We are also engaged in a number of faculty exchange programs right across the world. One in particular, of course, that is known to many of you is exchange program with Moi University in Kenya, from which the AMPATH project has arisen. AMPATH is the academic model for the prevention and treatment of HIV/AIDS. A senior member of the government, the federal government, said to me not long ago that this program with which he was familiar was the best of its kind that he knew of anywhere in the world, which I thought was high praise indeed. It's one of the largest and most comprehensive HIV/AIDS treatment and prevention programs in the world and now treats over 40,000 patients and feeds more than 30,000 people a week. It was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize and just received, just a few weeks ago, a $60 million grant from USAID. This program is a stellar example of IU's dedication to its global service mission. So, as we contemplate the end of the year and the beginning of a new one, we do so with an unwavering commitment to progress for IU and the state that she serves. From my perspective, this is time when good enough cannot be not good enough. It is time to build momentum in the sustained pursuit of academic excellence, in educating the workforce of tomorrow, conducting path-breaking research, fostering innovation, expanding global engagement, and ushering a new era of prosperity for Indiana. It is a time for action, as I said in my first trustee meeting as president. It is time for action on all fronts, vigorous action, continuing action, unrelenting action. It is certainly a time to depart from business as usual, and it is a time to further sharpen Indiana's cutting edge in education and research through its great research universities. Thank you all very much.
Have a brief question and answer session. If you'd like to have your question asked and answered, please write it down and send it up. A couple of people, knowing that Dr. McRobbie was coming, gave me questions on the way in. One of them goes back to, you mentioned degree completion rates, and I wondered if you have anything to say about the degree completion rate not only at the Bloomington campus but others in the state.
I touched on that in my speech.
Right.
I think my voice is about lasted to this point and about to give out on me. I touched on that in my speech. The program that I announced in my inauguration speech, which is called Degrees of Excellence, is a program that is aimed at an internal redistribution of funds to support programs to improve the graduation rates on all our campuses. Our graduation rates are really not where we want them to be. We want to see those improve significantly over the next five years. And again, the equation is an obvious one. The more graduates that we have, the more people we have in well-paid, skilled jobs, the greater the impact on the economy of the state, and the more that it benefits the state through things such as taxes and all the other intangibles of highly qualified positions. So clearly, as a university, one of our prime responsibilities is to be able to graduate students. And what we want to do is now to try and do that better.
You have at least one Australian fan in the audience who wonders if there are any aspects of Australian university best practice you'd like to introduce here.
Probably, it's an interesting question. I'm so used to thinking about it the other way around. One of the reasons, as somebody who's come from overseas 11 years ago, I say regularly that the university system of higher education in the United States is the best in the world, bar none. And you just look at the regular rankings of universities internationally, they're dominated by American universities in the top 50. And I have a whole story that I can tell about why I think that's the case, especially from somebody who's come from another part of the world. And frankly, I'm not convinced that universities as countries have got that much to learn from universities elsewhere in the world. And I've worked in, spent periods in universities in Europe and Asia and certainly in Australia. I think this country's got an enormous amount to teach the rest of the world about how great research universities should run. And of course, the rest of the world's very well aware of this because they're seeking to emulate the success of research universities in this country. But let me say that one of the factors that I think makes universities so great in this country is the extraordinary esteem and affection that alumni have for their alma maters. It just does not exist anywhere else in the world. There are some universities in the world where the alma maters of those institutions go on to become very influential, disproportionately so for that particular institution. But you just don't see the extraordinary love and esteem. In the last 9 months, I've given about 200 speeches around the state, and I'm continually amazed with the number of people who come up to me. I'm a graduate of IU. My father or mother was a graduate of IU, and their parents were graduates of IU, going back like that. And our kids are going to IU, whether they know it or not, and so on. And the affection and esteem for Indiana University is just extraordinary. But you see that repeated through. I know my colleagues from other institutions have exactly the same experience, and it is a uniquely American phenomena. And then when you combine that with the extraordinary personal generosity that these individuals show, and the extraordinary generosity of the great philanthropic foundations in this country, the Lilly Endowment, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and many of the other great foundations, that collectively provides what I think is the very substantial competitive edge that higher education in this country has over the rest of the world.
Here's a question that's quite appropriate for an economic club. A few years ago, Colorado considered a voucher-style approach to funding higher education, whereby state aid would go to students rather than institutions. Would IU be willing to compete under such an approach? Why or why not?
It's a question that I really don't have a strong view on. I would sort of prefer not to comment on, simply because although one can always point to, you know, imperfections of the present system, I think things are working reasonably well as they stand, and one would need to be very careful about initiatives that would cause pretty major disruptions to the way things are working, and have to be pretty assured that they would have an impact.
As an expert in information technology who spent a good deal of your life in that field, how do you see it transforming higher education in the future?
Sounds like a question my mother would have written in the audience there. Thank you if you're out there. I've said numerous times, I mean, information technology is just fundamental to every area of research and scholarship, from anthropology to zoology and everything in between. There's simply no area of scholarship or research that isn't affected to greater or lesser degree by information technology. I can give you examples, some of you are probably aware of it, of how information technology in a very high performance, very high powered way is being used in classics. There's a most wonderful project that is based at the University of Virginia, but it's got multiple components elsewhere, that's done a full-scale virtual reality digital reconstruction of Rome. So you can actually get immersed in this digital world, which was Rome, and then you can actually even scale it to whatever period of Rome you want. If you wanted it Rome at the period of the Republic or Rome at the period of the Empire or so on, you're able to scale that, and you can see how it will change. And then on each of the reconstructions of the building, you can click and get this, all the scholarly details about why they believe that's the best possible reconstruction of that building, theoretical reconstruction of that building, based on the archaeological evidence they have, and then who disagrees with that and the nature of all that. And all this is done in VR while you're actually immersed in this environment. Now, who would have thought that 20 years ago? But it's a superb use of the technology. And you just see that over and over and over again. The National Endowment for the Humanities, which is chaired by one of our most distinguished emerito faculty members, is now putting the great bulk of its resources into what it calls the digital humanities, how to apply digital technology to really support scholarship in the humanities and also in the arts as well. So the impact is huge, and you simply cannot do scholarship now in pretty much any discipline unless you have first-rate information technology. I think, as I've said in other contexts, I think the great universities of the future are going to be the universities that have great IT.
Several questions about your own international background. Is there a point in your personal and professional path that you can identify as the time you began to think of yourself as a Hoosier?
Probably soon after I moved here. I've said before that I was Australian by birth, but Hoosier by choice, as I think some of you heard me say that before. But I came here with my first wife, who passed away, and my children about 11 years ago and almost exactly a month, and I never regretted the move for one nanosecond. This is home, and I've loved every minute that I've lived in Indiana.
On that happy note, let us thank President Mick Robbie for his remarks.
You've been listening to Indiana University President Michael Mick Robbie. He spoke to the Economic Club of Indiana on December 18th. Next month's speaker is Indianapolis Public School Superintendent Eugene White. Thanks for joining us. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Mary Hartnett. Stan Jones is the commissioner for the Indiana Commission for Higher Education. Jones says the commission is working with state government to help students pay for college and complete their degrees.
My name is Stan Jones. I am Indiana's Higher Education Commissioner. The Indiana Higher Education Commission primarily acts as a liaison between state government and the universities, primarily the public universities. But we make budget recommendations to the General Assembly, we approve new programs on campus, and we develop higher education policy. The Commission over the last year has completed a strategic directions plan for higher education for the state of Indiana. And during the course of this year, we're working on implementation, and we focused on five areas. And the five areas that we focused on are affordability, making college more affordable, providing more financial aid, making the financial aid process both simpler and more transparent. Degree completion, we have lots of students entering higher education, but we need to improve the numbers of students that actually graduate. The third is accountability, making sure that universities are publicly accountable. The fourth is the community college is now about 4 or 5 years old, and we really want to take the next steps to really grow the community college. And last, but not least, we think that we want to assist Purdue and IU in their efforts to become top-tier universities in the country. Well, I think they need, I think that they need good teaching and good research, and they're very related. If you have good people who come to the university, to do research that will attract other faculty, other graduate students, who in turn teach courses. And so it's that synergy that's important. But I think that both IU and Purdue have pretty aggressive plans to bring in more research dollars. Well, I think that we are doing a pretty good job at providing opportunities for minority students, but they don't graduate at the same rates that other students do, and so we need to do a better job on supporting them once they're at college and improving their graduation rates. For example, black students graduate at about two-thirds the rate that white students do, and Hispanics about similar. But we could also improve graduation rates for white students. All students, we have about 35% of them graduate in 4 years and about 55% graduate in 6 years. And eventually maybe 60% graduate. So there's an awful lot of students who start but don't complete. Well, part of it's money, and people run out of money or they need to stop to work. Part of it is they weren't well enough prepared. They didn't take the right courses in high school. Part of it is the support on campus. They're really expected to, go to class and structure their own academic lives, and they probably need more support, especially their freshman and sophomore years. I don't think it's been obvious to every high school student that going to college can improve their income substantially. And historically in Indiana, you didn't need to necessarily go to college to get a good degree, earn a good living. You could work in a lot of the factories here in Indianapolis or in Lake County or in South Bend or in Kokomo and really sometimes earn more than a college graduate. But those jobs are gone. And so there's very few jobs that you could support yourself on that would be more than minimum wage without going to college. President McRobbie also spoke about some of the recent financial aid initiatives that Indiana University has just put in place, and I'm particularly impressed that they have what they call the 21st Century Covenant, which are for low-income students, and where the state has been paying the tuition, and Indiana University has said that they'll pay the room and board and books. So together it's a complete package, and I think it's really one of the first in the country that uses both the state, federal, and university resources to help low-income students. Secondly, President McRobbie indicated that the effect of that and other scholarship programs meant that students from families with income under $50,000, that it was nearly free. I think it's just several hundred dollars a year. And so it's a pretty strong commitment that Indiana University's made to families under $50,000. He said that the graduation rates, and he didn't talk about it in great detail, but he said that at some campuses they were unacceptable, and at some of the regional campuses the graduation rates are as low as 20%, even after students have been there for 6 years. So we know that at some of our campuses we really have a significant challenge to improve graduation rates. Well, I think the focus on graduation has been more recent. Most of the focus has been providing opportunities for young people, and I think the state's done a very good job of that. So the discussion about having more students graduate and more of them graduate in 4 years has been a more recent discussion and policy initiative at the state level. But specifically, we recommended in the General Assembly provided about $10 million of incentive dollars to encourage universities to graduate more students. Staying in Indiana is a significant issue for our young college graduates. Right now, we awful lot of them leave the state primarily for jobs, and so we have a net outflow of young college-educated students, so we need to hold on to those students.
Stan Jones is the commissioner for the Indiana Commission for Higher Education.
Proliance Energy, providing natural gas to more than 1,200 commercial, industrial, utility, and municipal customers. Proliance, adding power to energy. Information is at proliance.com.